This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
People who survived the surprise attacks by Hamas in Israel can still recount vivid images of the carnage of October 7th.
It was like an apocalypse, like everything ruined, like with bodies lay around.
Dan Alam told NPR that militants killed more than 100 people in his community, a small kibbutz in the south of Israel. He lost neighbors, friends. The pain is overwhelming.
I'm just grieving for my friends, my parents, my community. So I just don't know like how to deal with it, but we just know we've just been slaughtered and nobody came to help us.
Another survivor, Noy Katzim, lost their brother in the attack.
It's tough days. We're sitting here, Shiva, you know, it's 7 days after the funeral in Judaism, where you sit and view, like everyone comes and shares our condolences.
But for those whose loved ones haven't been identified, that mourning process may be on hold. Consider this. Forensic experts are still trying to identify hundreds of people killed in Israel in the Hamas attacks. Coming up, my visit to an army base in Israel where soldiers, medical examiners, and rabbis are working around the clock to identify people's remains. From NPR, I'm Ari Shapiro. It's Tuesday, October 17th.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp. It's easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Therapy can provide the tools and self-awareness to help you learn how to recharge, define your boundaries, and build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp Online Therapy. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month. Support for NPR and the following message come from Washington Wise. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington. Listen at schwab.com/Washington Wise.
It's Consider This from NPR.
We're on an army base south of Tel Aviv. And the sun is sinking behind low clouds as the smell of eucalyptus fills the air. A man in uniform wearing a kippah is leading us to see this place that the remains of people who were killed in the massacre have been brought for identification.
I ask you to respect this place. I ask you to respect the dead.
Like many members of the Israel Defense Forces, Lihi is only authorized to give us her first name. She wanted journalists from all over the world to see something that medical examiners, doctors, and rabbis have been bearing witness to over the last week. And a warning, the descriptions her colleagues gave are graphic and not suitable for some listeners.
We as a people can't remain silent for something like this.
Colonel Chaim Weisberg is head rabbi of the IDF. A military spokesman named David translates for him. Rabbi Weisberg has spent nearly 20 years in his position. He says, usually when a Jew dies, a family member says a prayer called the Mourner's Kaddish for the dead.
The regular way would be for a child to say Kaddish, this prayer for his parents. But here, we have entire families that no one's going to be able to say Kaddish for them.
More than 1,000 bodies have been brought here, truck after truck, full of human remains. People who were murdered when Hamas stormed across the border from Gaza into Israel on October 7th. Rabbi Weisberg breaks down as he describes in detail the conditions some of the bodies arrived in, burned and mutilated.
Nashim, tzeirot, nashim mevugarot, savtot leiladim neenazot. Shot again.
Young girls, elderly women, raped.
Chayalim ve'ezrachim sheroshehem ne'eraf ve'akol mitzulam ve'metuad lekol tzchokam shel ha'mechablim.
Soldiers and citizens whose heads were chopped off.
Many of the people identifying and caring for the dead are military reservists. They have day jobs as civilians. But since the attack, they've been here, like a dentist named Mayan. She identifies people's remains by their dental imprints.
Next to the identification place when we take place, there is family room to say goodbye to the loved ones, to say their last goodbye. So while identifying, we can hear the screams and we can hear the cries of a woman bearing her child, of child. Losing his parents and stay orphan. And we hear the cry and we hear the screams and we're still identifying tirelessly, uncompromisingly, to give this fallen the last respect that nobody gave them.
We walk towards the brightly lit white tent where soldiers have been doing this work. It is difficult work and the details, as you'll hear, are brutal. One of the soldiers is handing out a packet of masks because the smell is very strong. People have been working in a 24/7 shift since the massacre began. Even now, more than a week later, there are still bodies that haven't been identified. The rabbi said they have three ways of identifying bodies. One is a loved one, visually recognizing the person. Another is dental records. And the third is DNA identification. And he said, in too many of these cases, we have had to use DNA because the body has been so mutilated, he said, even in the case of children. There are about a dozen shipping containers, refrigerated, side by side, and men in white coveralls have just opened four of the shipping containers, and inside, stacked four high, are body bags. And some of the body bags are very, very small. And the rabbi says, usually when we're here, we don't speak. When you open the doors, you see that small sack, that's a baby. A light rain is starting to fall. A TV cameraman suddenly hunches over, sobbing. We walk in the misty drizzle to a small covered picnic table, the smoker's corner. And there, we sit in the dark with a woman named Avigail. Like others, the IDF only authorized her to give her first name.
It's hard to remember these days, but I work in high tech.
In Judaism, as in many religious traditions, there are rules for how a body is supposed to be treated before burial. For many years, Avigail has done that preparation for burial as a reservist for the army.
There's a concept of respect for the dead. It's treating every dead person with the dignity and respect that we'd want, the same as we'd want in when we're living. We're also very conscious of, is the woman exposed on the table, and to try to cover up when possible. Any part that was part of the human being, we bring it to burial with the body. So if there are ashes, we're very careful not to lose any of the ashes. If there's skin that was torn away, certainly if there's blood, if there's flesh, we collect everything so that it's all buried with the body.
When I ask what the last week has felt like to her, more than 1,000 bodies to be identified and prepared for burial, from babies to elders, she says, for most of the last week, she has felt very little. Blocking out feelings was the only way to do the work that needed to be done.
Despite the fact that I was only sleeping about 2 hours per 24-hour cycle, and I was hardly eating, I felt like I had the energy, I don't know if it's adrenaline or the mission, the importance of the mission, and just keep going, do the work, understand that it's horrific what we're seeing, but do our best to get the correct identification for each of the murdered women and prepare them for burial in the most respectful manner once they've been identified. I think in the last day, we've been slowing down just a little. We're making a lot of progress. And so I think it's catching up with me a little.
You're starting to feel the feelings.
The exhaustion, but it's not really the physical. It's maybe part of it is the physical exhaustion. It's the mental exhaustion. We're talking about it a little more. We have some psychiatrists and social workers that are talking to us after shifts. But I think it's like starting to build up. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question. I don't remember what it was.
How you're feeling. And it sounds like for a while you weren't feeling much and now you're really feeling a lot.
Yes.
As somebody who has done this work in the Army for a long time, you've seen people killed in violent ways. How has this been different from the deaths from violence that you have already dealt with over many years?
I think it's different in two ways. The numbers are, like, mind-boggling. I still, you know, I'm at it, and I can't wrap my head around it. I go through the lists again, and I'm like, wow, and I can't believe that I can't remember from 2 days ago what exactly. Was she the one that was in her cute pajamas, or was she the one that was, you know, I don't know what. The numbers are incredible, and it's not just knowing the numbers. It's seeing the amount, and the smell intensifies. It's something that I've never, you know, seeing horrible deaths, I've never had to deal with a smell at this intensity. And the other is, it's never felt this cruel. I mean, we're seeing bodies that were mutilated after they were already dead. What, like, why is, you know, it's harder to, I feel, wrap my head around it.
This experience has obviously changed you. Has it changed your view of humanity? Has it changed your view of people?
I think it shattered something in my sense of security. It's certainly, you know, something in the sense of the equilibrium of the world, of the balance of good and evil. You know, I kept, for years growing up, I thought that the world is improving. As a human being, as a woman, I felt like things were progressing in the right direction. I can't think that anymore, and that's shattering.
Over our heads, Israeli military jets rumble through the sky. And as we drive away from the army base, a siren blares through the air. Every car on the freeway pulls over to the shoulder. People huddle on the blacktop from the threat of incoming rockets. Reminders that while people are still identifying the bodies from October 7th, the war and its death toll only continue to grow. Tuesday night, that death toll grew dramatically in Gaza. An explosion hit a hospital. Hundreds of people were killed. Egypt condemned what it called, quote, a deliberate bombing of civilian facilities. The Palestinian ambassador to the UK called it a massacre and war crimes, posting an image of the building on fire. And the Palestinian Authority declared 3 days of mourning. The Israeli military blamed Islamic Jihad, saying the hospital explosion was a failed rocket launch. It's Consider This from NPR. I'm Ari Shapiro.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BlackRock's podcast, The Bid. On the latest episode of The Bid, BlackRock's chairman and CEO, Larry Fink, discusses challenges facing investors such as retirement and others where the global capital markets figure into the solutions. Listen to the episode on The Bid and subscribe for market insights from BlackRock's thought leaders.